You let him try violin because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, July 29th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. On Wednesday, President Biden issued a new directive instructing federal agencies to develop voluntary cybersecurity goals for companies that operate critical infrastructure in the U.S. It's the latest step the administration is taking to combat the risks of cyber attacks following several high-profile ransomware strikes. On today's show, Dustin Volz, who covers cybersecurity and intelligence for The Wall Street Journal, will join us to discuss what the rules mean for private businesses and the way the Biden administration is pushing at the national and international level to beef up cybersecurity protections. That's after these headlines. Video game maker Activision Blizzard has backtracked on its initial reaction to a lawsuit alleging the company paid its female employees less than their male counterparts and ignored blatant harassment. Bobby Kotick, the company's chief executive, said in a statement Tuesday night the gaming giant's original response had been tone-deaf. He apologized for not providing the right empathy and understanding. The statement came hours before a planned employee walkout over the company's handling of the accusations. Activision, the maker of Call of Duty and Candy Crush, initially said the suit contained distorted and, in many cases, false descriptions of its past. More than 3,000 current and former employees, as of late Tuesday, signed a letter to Activision's leadership that was viewed by the Wall Street Journal, calling the company's response to the lawsuit abhorrent and insulting. Activision Blizzard says it's hired a law firm to investigate complaints. We discuss the lawsuit and issues of gender discrimination in the gaming industry in more detail on Tuesday's episode, so be sure to cue that up next if you haven't already heard it. Facebook beat Wall Street's earnings expectations in the second quarter, reporting revenue topping $29 billion. But the social media giant told investors it expected slower revenue growth in the coming quarters. Monthly active users across the company's platforms, which include Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, grew to more than 3.5 billion for the past 3 months. But in the U.S. and Canada, where revenue per user is highest, user rates remain the same from the last quarter. In her first appearance before Congress as head of the Federal Trade Commission, Lina Khan said digital platforms were partially to blame for a surge in fraud reported during the pandemic. Khan, a longtime critic of big tech, said online firms, quote, tolerated and even promoted fraudulent conduct on their platforms. She did not name any company specifically or lay out any action the FTC might take. A Republican FTC commissioner who also testified took issue with Khan's characterization of large companies perpetuating fraud, saying they should focus on the harm to consumers, not the identities of defendants. Online platforms are typically shielded from legal action stemming from the posts users make on their sites under a rule known as Section 230, which has been under debate. And Google has announced it will require all workers coming into its U.S.-based campuses to be vaccinated in the coming weeks. In a note to staff, Google also said it would be delaying the reopening of its offices until mid-October. The company's chief executive, Sundar Pichai, said he hoped the measure would give employees greater peace of mind as offices open. Google is one of the largest private companies in the U.S. to introduce a vaccination requirement for its workforce. The move comes on the heels of similar steps taken by federal agencies and local governments in recent days. All right, coming up, President Biden wants cybersecurity standards for critical infrastructure. What does it mean for U.S. businesses? We'll discuss after the break.
I'm Alex Yule, host of The Readback from Barron's. It's been an extraordinary year for stock markets, particularly for companies going public. IPOs soared, and they show no sign of slowing down. But the boom didn't come out of the blue, and there was plenty of pain on the road to IPO success. So how do you put a price on innovation? This season on The Readback, we'll find out. We're winding back the clock on a decade of IPOs, from Moderna and Facebook to Uber and Airbnb. The Readback is available wherever you get podcasts.
Cyber attacks that have left businesses big and small scrambling have been making headlines a lot in recent months. Ransomware attacks have crippled Colonial Pipeline and the world's largest meat processor, JBS. And even tens of thousands of businesses, government offices, and schools using Microsoft's email software. The incidents have made it clear that hacking doesn't just affect the target. It could have wider national consequences. On Wednesday, President Biden took his latest step to address cybersecurity, issuing a new directive instructing federal agencies to create voluntary cybersecurity goals for companies that operate critical infrastructure in the U.S. Joining us to discuss this new directive and how the administration is approaching cybersecurity is our reporter, Dustin Volz. Hey, Dustin.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
What is the purpose of this memorandum? What is the Biden administration hoping to achieve here?
So this new national security memorandum issued by President Biden today is really looking at the nation's critical infrastructure, saying it is not secure enough from cyber attacks, as recent events have shown. And as a result, we need to have voluntary guidelines that are going to hopefully incentivize these industries, the companies that own critical infrastructure in the United States, to adopt baseline cybersecurity expectations that will protect them from ransomware and other kinds of debilitating, disruptive cyber attacks.
Let's talk about who's covered in this memorandum. What exactly is considered critical infrastructure?
So the federal government actually has a formal critical infrastructure designation, and they've determined that there are 16 different sectors or industries that are critical and as a result are sort of in need of added cybersecurity protection. That includes, you know, everything from the chemical sector to, you know, water treatment facilities, nuclear power plants. A few years ago, we designated election in equipment as critical in the wake of 2016 Russian hacking operations. And what the administration is saying, hey, we need cybersecurity baseline guidelines for all of you to adhere to rather than sort of the existing piecemeal or patchwork approach where different critical infrastructure sectors are largely working on their own with minimal guidance or oversight to protect themselves from cyber attacks.
So one thing that stands out with this step is that it covers private businesses, not just government agencies or government contractors. Have we heard from any businesses yet on this memorandum?
We haven't, not yet. You know, this is a sort of the latest step in a long-standing tension between the government and the private industry, going back really several administrations. You know, all the way back to the Bush administration, there's been debate and dialogue about to what degree should these critical infrastructure industries be subject to voluntary standards versus, you know, potential requirements or mandates on how they should safeguard their industrial control equipment from cyber attacks.
Let's talk about that a little bit. President Biden has said cybersecurity is a top priority for national security. So why make these goals voluntary?
These are voluntary because it is a difficult political lift to pass legislation that would impose requirements or mandates on private industry. You have to remember that, you know, the vast majority, by some estimates, about 90% of critical infrastructure in the United States, everything from defense contractors to hospitals to meat suppliers to water and wastewater systems, are privately owned. And so when you're talking about privately owned businesses, there's always a reticence, especially on the Republican side, to impose any sort of requirements or expectations on them that they would have to adhere to and potentially face a penalty if they don't. So just last week, the Biden administration did, in fact, roll out some requirements for critical infrastructure, but dealing specifically with gas and oil pipelines. And this was, of course, in the wake of the Colonial Pipeline hack a few months ago. Another major thing that President Biden did back in May was sign a broad executive order on cybersecurity, which, among other things, told federal agencies and their contractors that they work with that they needed to adopt a host of cybersecurity standards, such as, you know, encrypting data and ensuring all employees use multi-factor authentication for their devices and their accounts to work with the federal government.
Okay, those are the steps the government is taking internally and nationally. Now I want to talk about the steps it's taking internationally. The government blamed a Russian-based hacking group for the attack on Colonial Pipeline a few months ago. Has there been any progress to get Russia to address these groups?
I think that depends on who you ask. You know, certainly the more optimistic folks in the administration might say that the ongoing series of dialogues they're having with the Russian government about ransomware, specifically on critical infrastructure, that it is going well. You know, I think others are a little more skeptical that Russia is going to change its behavior, that as long as Vladimir Putin allows these criminal groups to operate within his borders with impunity, that they're going to keep engaging in ransomware attacks against U.S. businesses that can often earn them millions or tens of millions of dollars. So it remains to be seen, you know, how well those talks are going. But, you know, the Biden administration has tried to increase costs on Russia for a variety of cyber attacks. And they've done so recently with China as well.
Right. China is another focus of the Biden administration's cybersecurity concerns. Just last week, the U.S. government accused hackers affiliated with China's intelligence service for a hack on Microsoft. Is the U.S. government taking a different approach with China?
I think a lot of observers would say that the approach has been quite different with China. And this is something that predates the Biden administration as well. But, you know, essentially what we saw last week was an effort to get a very broad coalition of international partners together to publicly shame, to condemn China for its actions, including the recent Microsoft Exchange server hack, which was widely considered to be essentially the most reckless cyber attacks linked to China ever. And, you know, that's all well and good. And the Biden administration would say it's important to get that coalition together first before pursuing further action. But I think a lot of folks also wondered, you know, so what? And we've shamed China before and has little to no effect. We really need to impose costs like sanctions. And so far, the Biden administration and its predecessors, you know, have been really reluctant to do that with Beijing. I think that's something that the Biden administration is really trying to figure out going forward, is how can we develop sort of, you know, international expectations and standards for everyone on what is acceptable, what is not acceptable, and what sort of penalties we might pursue if and when hostile cyber actions are taken against us.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. That's our reporter, Dustin Volz. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. You can always find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.